to time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. North Korea launched another missile over Japan early today, just days after the UN imposed additional sanctions for conducting its sixth nuclear test. The missile was launched from the capital, Pyongyang, and flew over the northern Japanese island of Hokkaido. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said the international community needs to come together and send a clear message to North Korea that it is threatening world peace with its provocations. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis called the latest missile launch a reckless act by the North Koreans. On a visit to storm-ravaged U.S. state of Florida, President Trump applauded emergency personnel and the military for their response to Hurricane Irma, which inflicted heavy damage several days ago as it churned through the state.
Well, we love the people of Florida, and they went through something that I guess the likes of which we could really say nobody's ever seen before. They've never seen a category like this coming because it came in really at a 5. All you have to do is look at what happened in the Keys. But we love these people, and we're going to be back, and we're going to help. And the job that everybody has done in terms of first responder and everybody has been incredible.
There were at least 25 storm-related deaths in Florida. Before that, in the Caribbean, dozens died. Devastation was widespread. An American citizen fighting for the Islamic State in Syria is in U.S. custody after surrendering to coalition-backed Syrian fighters. U.S. Defense Department has detained the American as a known enemy combatant. They also said they pursue ISIS fighters regardless of nationality. This is VOA News. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for gun and car bomb attacks in southern Iraq. That story now from VOA's Andrew Palchevsky.
The twin attacks killed at least 50 people, and more than 80 people were wounded. Officials said that the attacks took place near Nasiriyah, the capital of Dikar province. Militants opened fire at a restaurant, and shortly afterwards, a suicide attack was carried out by a driver when an explosive-laden vehicle struck a nearby security checkpoint. The Shiite-dominated Dikar province is 320 kilometers southeast of Baghdad. Andrew Palchevsky, VOA News.
Trucks carrying emergency supplies to children affected by the Rohingya refugee crisis are making their way to Bangladesh, where hundreds of thousands of members of Myanmar's Rohingya community have fled for safety. The aid announcement comes a day after UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres described the situation as tantamount to ethnic cleansing for the Rohingya community. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spoke about the violence in western Myanmar, where Rohingya say they have been under siege from government troops as well as Buddhists.
And I think it is important that the global community speak out in support of what we all know the expectation is towards the treatment of people, regardless of their ethnicity, and that we must, you know, this violence must stop, this persecution must stop. It's been characterized by many as ethnic cleansing. That must stop.
Government officials in Myanmar consider almost all of Rohingya's illegal immigrants from Bangladesh, even though many have lived in the country for generations. Violence involving the Rohingyas has been going on for a long time, but it grew to a crisis last month. President Trump says he's close to a deal with congressional leaders to protect hundreds of thousands of young immigrants from being deported from the U.S. years after their parents illegally brought them into the United States, but that any agreement must include a massive border security. Mr. Trump's remarks came not long after he said on Twitter that he had not made a deal with the top Democrats in Congress and the so-called Deferred Action for Child Arrivals program for the Trump administration rescinded last week while giving Congress 6 months to vote on the issue. After a 20-year mission, including two extensions, the Cassini spacecraft will make a final death dive into the planet Saturn today. Scientists and engineers at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory said the decision to end the life of the spacecraft in the way is because that's what it would need.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, September the 15th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. Nigeria's security forces say they will not be deterred in their determination to defeat the Boko Haram militants. And Zimbabwe's elections body officially began registration of eligible voters for next year's election, but the opposition is expressing concerns about the process.
I urge all eligible Zimbabweans to go to their established centers to register in their numbers. With these few remarks, I wish to declare the biometric voter registration in Zimbabwe officially launched.
Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe and Liberians are getting ready to head to the polls in less than a month. In Liberia's capital, Monrovia, presidential candidates are launching their campaigns.
I'm running to continue the good things that this government has done, but I also believe I have my own ideas of what need to be done.
Liberian Vice President and presidential candidate Joseph Boakai will officially launch his campaign for month tomorrow. And in the weeks after the deadly mudslide in Sierra Leone that killed more than 500 people, health workers are addressing mental health issues plaguing many of the survivors. Stay tuned for those stories, plus our Africa Sports Roundup, right here on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's elections body began registration of eligible voters for next year's elections. But as Sebastian Mofo reports, the country's opposition has reservations about the 4-month-long process which President Robert Mugabe called for.
I urge all eligible Zimbabweans to go to their established centers to register in their numbers. With these few remarks, I wish to declare the biometric voter registration in Zimbabwe officially launched. And wish the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission the best as it carries out its constitutional mandate to register voters and to conduct elections in this country. I thank you.
That was Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe at the State House on Thursday at the launch of the country's voter registration for 2018 elections. Immediately, he became the first Zimbabwean to be on the country's new voters roll being created using the biometric voter registration system. After the exercise ends in January, Mugabe is expected to announce the election's date. But as the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission was launching the voter registration exercise, the country's main opposition party was filing a petition at the High Court seeking the exercise to be halted. Tabita Kumalo, the spokeswoman of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, or the MDC, explains why her party wants voter registration stopped.
We are challenging the process of voter registration for a very simple reason. We are saying all the BVR kits must be in place. The time has come for this government to respect Zimbabwean people.
Rita Makarau, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission chairperson, told journalists that the voter registration exercise would not be stopped by the opposition MDC's court application complaining about the shortage of equipment for the exercise.
It will have no impact because the blitz is going to start in the middle of October, where we have the other 2,600 kits. In the meantime, we are using the 400 kits that we have. Our target is 7 million, so maybe let's talk after the exercise and see whether we'd have achieved our target or not.
The opposition argues that the 93-year-old Mugabe should have proclaimed the 4-month registration period when all equipment has arrived in Zimbabwe from a China-registered company that was awarded the tender by the elections body. The opposition fear that Mugabe will call for elections after the exercise ends in January, before all eligible Zimbabweans have been registered to vote. Zimbabwe's polls for long now have spilled into courts, with the opposition accusing the country's elections body of favouring Mugabe's ZANU-PF party, which has been in power since 1980. Now Zimbabwe's 2018 elections are already in court, even before the date has been set. The High Court of Zimbabwe is yet to set a date for hearing the opposition petition filed on Thursday. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
It is 25 more days before Liberians go to the polls to choose a successor to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. There are 20 presidential candidates, and tomorrow, Saturday, Vice President Joseph Boakai will officially launch his campaign for the Montserrado, which includes the capital city region. Mr. Boakai tells VOA's James Batty, who is on assignment in Liberia, his Liberians should give him the opportunity to continue the good policies of the current administration and to implement his own agenda.
The first thing is that the launch in Montserrado, we consider it as a launch at a national level, because this county represents a huge number of people from all the counties. And I believe it's a good opportunity to capture that audience. It's a good opportunity to share with them some of the things that I believe are important to moving this country forward. We all can say what we want to say, but we know that our country has a lot of challenges. I may not be able to spell it all, but it will be an opportunity to thank them, to give a little bit of what I think and what I know this country should be looking at during our administration.
Mr. Vice President, some of your competitors are saying 12 years is enough. Vice President Boakai should leave with President Sirleaf. Do you have any comment?
I think they are quite right. 12 years is enough for being a vice president. So I'm not running to be vice president. I'm running to be president of this country. And I'm running to continue the good things that this government has done, but I also believe I have my own ideas of what need to be done, what could have been done since 170 years, and I think this is an opportunity for me to do that.
So if they say, well, how come he did not do it for 12 years?
I'm not president. I'm vice president, and my role is very clear. I have done my job as the vice president. I am going to do the work of the president of Liberia.
One of the supporters or key members of the ruling party, Vani Sherman, said recently that the party, that you did not need President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's support. Is that the case, or do you want the president's support? And if I may ask, is there some problem within the ruling party?
I don't have any problem with anybody. I have differences with people on the way they think, what they want to happen. I cannot say I do not need support from a partisan of the Unity Party. All partisans of the Unity Party, including the president, their contributions to the party are welcome. So how can I say a president who has been at the helm of this party for 12 years, how can I say I won't need a help? If it's not forthcoming, well, but I cannot say I won't need it. I need everybody's contribution.
What do you mean if it's not forthcoming? As you said, she's been the leader of the party for 12 years. So one would think that she's going to be on your bandwagon.
That would have been an obvious situation, but I'm not complaining about it. The party is moving forward. As and when people decide to contribute, we welcome it. Some people want to begin early. Some people want to begin in the middle. We're still waiting for those who want to come in at the time they want to do so.
Let me ask you, Mr. Vice President, because some people have made the comment that they think you are old to run for president.
I don't think the Constitution barred me from running as president. The Liberian people feel very comfortable. It is the Liberian people that determine who should become president. And I can see that the Liberian people welcome me very much because my age has given me the opportunity to know what this country needs.
I did visit the red light market area. Listening to those women who are in that marketplace, I get a feeling that they expect a lot from anyone who is going to be president.
I have said, and I continue to say, that we're going to have marketplaces that represent the quality of life of our people, our women. Marketplaces that will have a daycare to look after their kids. Marketplaces that will have even a place where the market women themselves, we have an opportunity to learn. And my approach to this is that all the people who run around asking for scholarship, you want me to sponsor you, you should be able to give 2 hours to go to that market to teach those people, their children, and themselves. We have an opportunity for a small society that we are to give each and everyone in this country an opportunity to read and write.
Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai. He was speaking to VOA's James Batty from Liberia's capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. On now to Nigeria, where the spokesman of Nigeria's army says that the fight against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram is ongoing with the aim of defeating the militants as part of its mandate. Army spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kuka Sheka Usman says that the army has so far recorded successes by sharply reducing the ability of the militants to carry out rampant attacks, including suicide bombings in parts of the country. But critics say that the army has not been truthful or transparent about the fight against the militants, who they say still carry out attacks. They say the army often claims victory only for the militants to attack those in the same areas the army claimed victory. Their comments came after Abubakar Shekau, leader of the Boko Haram militants, mocked the army's ineffectiveness in a recent video. This after a 40-day ultimatum issued by the chief of the army expired. The ultimatum was to kill or capture Shekau. Army spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the army would not be deterred in the determination to defeat the militants.
Well, the militants actually, we are still doing what we call Operation Response 2. Invariably, it is a continuation of the clearance operation against the remnants of the Boko Haram terrorists that have been happening in various nooks and crannies of the northern, particularly in Borno State. As you notice, gradually, security problems posed by Boko Haram, especially suicide bombing, is gradually attenuating, and we are continuing and building on that.
The chief of the army recently issued a 40-day ultimatum to smoke out Shekau. The ultimatum came and went. Shekau came out mocking the military and all that. How are you responding to Nigerians regarding this?
You know, even the theater commander of Operation Lancia Adole, in one of his press conferences, he addressed the issue. Normally, he directed to capture the purported leader of Boko Haram terrorist group Shekau is concomitant to overall objective of clearing the remnants of the Boko Haram terrorists. And of course, the chief of army staff has come out to even commend the troops of Operation Lancia Adole for doing a wonderful job because they, you know, took the direction with utmost zeal and determination to the point that it led to the neutralization of 5 key Boko Haram terrorist members. And that is why even when they came out in the so-called videos you are talking about to allege that they were there, we challenged them to produce those neutralized leaders. And up to now, they have not been able to do so. And in fact, we have gone further to neutralize 2 more key leaders. So invariably, the move is closing gradually, and we definitely are going to capture not him, but the remnants of the Boko Haram, unless, of course, some of them have
some groups are complaining that the military has not been all that truthful and transparent to Nigerians about the fight against Boko Haram. They cited instances where they said the military said they have cleared the area only for Boko Haram to return in those areas, and that the military is selling something that is not a true reflection of what is on the ground. What do you say to that?
Well, that assertion is not correct. And unfortunately, people are trying to play with the issue of the fight against terrorism and insurgency for political expediency. The military has never, ever come out to say a particular area has been cleared and security agencies have taken over and Boko Haram came back and attacked that community. It has not been so. Areas where you have had those isolated attacks were areas we suspect that we have shot Boko Haram terrorists and they have not been cleared to the point that they always tell the inhabitants that look, this is the limitation or this is the area you should operate and these are the areas that you should not operate.
Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman is the spokesman for Nigeria's army. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti from the capital, Abuja. In the weeks after the deadly mudslide in Sierra Leone that killed more than 500 people, with 800 still missing, health workers are addressing mental health issues plaguing many of the survivors. According to the World Health Organization, there is a shortage of psychiatrists and mental health drugs in the country. WHO mental health specialist Dr. Florence Bayingana talked to Ricky Shryok about one woman who lost 16 members of her family in the mudslide and is suffering severe depression.
So she got slowly, she started to talk too much, to move up and down. She was in one of the IDP camps. And then the nurse noticed that she was getting restless and anxious, and she hadn't slept for days. So they gave her a little bit of a sedative, but she seemed to be getting worse. And eventually they called in a psychiatrist and she got a little bit of an antipsychotic. And then she was properly reviewed by a psychiatrist and they found she actually had severe depression now. It was 3 weeks after. 3 weeks after we could recognize now that it's very severe psychotic depression.
This is just one case of, I'm guessing, many people who are undergoing anxiety, depression after the mudslides. Is that correct?
Yes, this is only one case. So right after the mudslide, WHO, but government, Ministry of Health nurses were able to go in and they were doing listening and helping. In the immediate aftermath, there were people who would attempt suicide because they would say, I don't think life is worth living. So in the shock, some people wanted to throw themselves into the river. But with some intervention and counseling, they calmed down. Some people were not talking at all in the shock. So many days, some people just sat and wouldn't talk. They were not eating. They were not sleeping. It's the rainy season. So anytime it rains, some people are not able to sleep. They become very anxious. But now after 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we see the symptoms that we recognize as either severe anxiety disorder. Some people are getting panic attacks, severe depression, as well as PTSD.
Is there a shortage, first of all, of psychiatrists and psychologists in the country? And how is WHO working to address these needs?
Yes, there's a very severe shortage of trained, I think properly trained, qualified professionals like psychiatrists. In 2016, we got two psychiatrists back. They trained in Kenya. So we now have three psychiatrists in country. So these are three psychiatrists, but the World Bank recently recruited another one from Nigeria. And because we were just coming out of Ebola and trying to rebuild the mental health and the health system. So as part of that process, the World Bank has been recruiting various professionals to build up the training. the training of specialists and also to provide services. So they had recruited a psychiatrist. So we have that one psychiatrist. And we also have another psychiatrist who's with King's Health. The other challenge is the one of drugs. The country has never bought mental health drugs at all in the history of Sierra Leone. The Ministry of Health has never purchased mental health drugs.
That was Dr. Florence Bayingana, mental health specialist at the World Health Organization's Sierra Leone office. She was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Freetown. And now it's time for our sports roundup with Samson O'Malley. Good morning, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the latest FIFA ranking, which was released on Thursday. Cape Verde Island made the biggest leap in the overall ranking, jumping 47 spots to be ranked number 67 globally from number 114 in the world. The Faroes maintain number one position in Africa, but 30 in the world, ahead of North African rivals Tunisia in second place, while DR Congo fall 14 places globally down to fourth on the continent, behind third place Senegal. African football giant Nigeria have dropped to fifth place. Staying with football news, host of the 2017 West African Football Union WAFA Cup of Nations, Ghana defeated Guinea 2-0 in their first game in the group stages in Cape Coast on Thursday. Goals from Steven Safo and substitute Kwame Kizito secured the first win of the group for Ghana. With the win, Ghana now top Group A, which also contains Nigeria and Mali, on 3 points, while Guinea are bottom. Ghana's next game comes up on Saturday, September 16th in Cape Coast against Mali, while Guinea will face Nigeria. The group's first game played early on Thursday saw Nigeria and Mali play a 0-0 draw. In today's fixtures, Niger will be up against Cote d'Ivoire, while Senegal will take on Benin Republic. And now to the Continental CAF Confederations Cup, where SuperSport United of South Africa will host Zambia campaigners ZESCO United later tonight in the Total CAF Confederations Cup 2017 quarterfinal first leg clash. The two sides battle in a Southern African derby at the Lucas Moripe Stadium in Pretoria in what will be the two sides' debut continental meeting. In other fixtures, it will be MC Alger versus Club African of Tunisia. FC Rabat of Morocco will be hosting CS Faxien of Tunisia. And finally, TP Mazembe will travel to Obeid to face Hilal Obeid of Sudan. In basketball news, Morocco on Thursday became the first team to reach the FIBA AfroBasket 2017 tournament semifinals thanks to a 66-62 victory over Egypt. With the win, Morocco have reached the last four of the competition for the first time since 1980, when they hosted and claimed a third place in the competition. Morocco will now face Tunisia in today's semifinals. Senegal on Thursday also made a tremendous statement of their FIBA AfroBasket 2017 intentions by beating Angola 66-57 to join Nigeria, Tunisia and Morocco in the semifinals. With the win, Senegal reached the last four of the tournament for the third time in a row, advancing to Friday's semifinals to take on defending champions Nigeria. The reigning champions Nigeria saw off Cameroon 106-91. And that's it for Daybreak Africa's sports for this Friday morning. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this Friday, September the 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again Monday for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Ricky Shryok, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a great weekend, Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Cloti, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.